And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren, and joining me today is Ceridium.
Kapla.
And we are interviewing our special guest, Todd Haberkorn.
Hello.
Who most of you probably know as Spock from Star Trek Continues, although to me, he will always be the Elven Archer from Orcs Must Die.
That's a cool game. I was like, wow, this is a fun game. I like this.
It's a very good game, and I don't think you understand, because the game tells me that I should build spike traps and swinging mace traps, and I'm like, no, I'm just going to spam archers. They're the best unit, and it's just like, your archers are getting hit by orcs. I'm like, whatever, I have more archers.
Best thing I've heard all day.
All right. So, as I said before, you are, of course, Spock from the Star Trek Continues fan series. However, you have had a multitude of other roles, especially a lot in voice acting for cartoons and anime. Would you care to tell the audience about some of those roles that you've had?
I've had a very lucky career so far to be a part of a lot of big voiceover projects that, like Soul Eater. I was Death the Kid in Soul Eater, or Italy and Italia, which is a very popular show where we actually, when we first did that show, back when it first was coming out, the pre-orders outsold James Cameron's Avatar for pre-orders on everything available on Amazon. So I was like, hey, that's kind of cool.
Gotcha.
We didn't even have to paint ourselves blue. And I've been a part of great video games like World of Warcraft and Black Ops 2 with the Call of Duty series, and Street Fighter 4 and Silent Hill, and lots of Final Fantasy and things like that. So it's been a great ride so far, and I hope it continues.
So you've got a very extensive resume in voice acting and film. So how did you get involved in Star Trek Continues?
Well, I've known Vic and have worked with him for a long time. And I always knew his affinity for Trek, and of course I like Trek myself. I've seen all of the iterations of the show, and I've seen the movies, and I'm a big fan of Next Gen and the original series, of course. And when he started talking about wanting to do a project, because we had worked on other fan series together, and when he had talked about wanting to do a project, I had heard a little bit about the budget behind it and who was going to be involved, and of course, knowing how extensive he knows the series and how much love he has for it, I was confident that it was going to be a good production based on the fact that he would be at the helm in the captain's chair, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I was very happy to try to ask for a part. At first he had approached me and he wanted me to audition for Spock, which I was totally cool with doing, because I mean those are some shoes to fill, and you've got to have the right chemistry, and you have to have someone that hopefully understands the character a little bit, and I hope that I've done that. But at the time, there were a lot of people auditioning, so he sent sides from specific episodes that he wanted us to audition with. And so what I did was, instead of just setting up a normal a chair and having someone read with me, I had a buddy of mine, and we shot it on green screen, and I got into makeup and in uniform, and I shot all of the scenes on green screen, and then I went back, and my buddy inserted me into the original series scenes from which the scenes were pulled from. So when Shatner was talking and he would go back to cut over to Spock, it would be me. And so it looked like I was in the original episode. And so we sent that to him, and he was enthusiastic about it and loved it. And then I joined the crew.
That's awesome.
Very cool. Awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. I was glad to. I was glad it worked, because I, mm-hmm. I like to have fun when I can, and especially on a project like this where one of the main goals is to have fun. I was like, well, I bet you we can take a little bit of creative license with this, so I'm glad that it worked.
I mean, this sounds like the project to do it on.
Yeah, and we, it was fun to then after that to go get the ears fitted with, some really heavy hitters in the world of special effects and such, and we had the makeup artist that was the makeup artist on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel, and he was really excited about being a part of it. So we went over to his LA studio and mold and got the ears cast on me, and you know, we had a lot of people involved in the project. And we have some great makeup artists now that work on the makeup. So it's a huge production, and just to you know, coming from the world of production and knowing when you see, because I've worked on projects that have had no budget to projects that have had big budgets, and you can kind of tell when a project is going to be of quality, and this one was through and through.
Yeah, it was definitely watching the episode for the first time. Like, I was very impressed by just the obvious production values, just looking at the set. It looked, you know, like a TOS set. So I was...
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. You know, that's we have the largest recreation of the original series set in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's down to the exact most minute detail, because the DP is also an architect major. So he took the original blueprints and he extrapolated the numbers and he gave us the measurements and we created the sets exactly to those specifications.
That's really cool. And I know, like, I'm pretty sure Sori and I are on the same page. We both really, really liked the first episode.
The story was fantastic.
Well, right now I'm reading over the next episode right now before we get started. We're going to be filming in October, so
Ooh.
I'm looking over the next script, and I'm excited about the next guest star, and I think fans, people are going to be excited to see who's involved. So we're going to keep going, and what's great is that, you know, hearing people from the Star Trek universe talk about it and comment on it is a lot of fun, and so I've had some people that I've looked up to in the Star Trek world speak highly of it. It is a really good feeling, and lets us know that the work that we put into it, the months of preparation are not lost on the audience that watches it.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. Excuse me. Any specifics? Like, who have you been talking to, like, from the Star Trek universe? I know Nichelle Nichols has seen it, and she really enjoyed it.
Yeah, she enjoyed it. You know, I ran into Brent Spiner in the airport, and he made a comment about it. That was awesome. Garrett Wang from Voyager likes it, and so we've had you know, every time I've run into those guys, they speak very highly of it, and I'm very appreciative of that.
And you know, Garrett Wong is a very honest fellow about what he thinks of various things of Star Trek. So if he says he likes it, you know, he's not just saying.
Oh yeah, he's a great dude. Ball of energy. He's a great guy.
So my first question on the character, on like the playing Spock, how do you approach playing a character whose shtick is that he doesn't show emotion?
Well, how I approached it is a lot of times when you see fan productions, the character of Spock is. It's difficult. So Vic often says it's the hardest role in the show. And I don't know about that, but that's just what he says. For me, I come at it from a place of there's actually quite a bit of emotion beneath the surface, but it's always at bay. And so I try to approach it as the stoicism is not from a place of calm as much as it is holding back and not wanting to give in to the emotional response that may almost come naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where I try to come from it, in addition to the other, you know, the other homework I try to do for the scenes. So that's kind of my baseline.
Were you intimidated taking on such an iconic role?
Say that one more time.
I was just wondering if you felt like any kind of intimidation for taking on such an iconic role.
Well, I think because it's iconic, it helped me because there was so much to pull from and to look at. And so as far as research, and I don't want to copy Leonard. And that's the thing that's always interesting about the comments that people leave about the episode, because for the most part, they're all very positive. But there are some, I mean, people are nitpicking down to the length of people's hair. They're nitpicking down to like, oh, well, this sleeve is longer than this sleeve. I mean,
Oh my goodness.
I mean, when you're getting down to that kind of, I mean, you're not going to like it at all, because if you're nitpicking at that level, I mean, I can't help you. But I think that because there's so much out there, it lets me look at it and then look at kind of, I try to capture a nuance. I don't want to, it's not an imitation. I don't want to imitate what Leonard Nimoy did, because There's only one Leonard Nimoy, and I'm not playing Leonard Nimoy playing Spock. I'm taking the essence of what that character is that I've learned through research about, you know, what it is to be a Vulcan, what it is to, you know, be a Starfleet officer, and take that and just let Leonard's performance inform that in a way. But I hope I'm, you know, I don't want to imitate him.
Right.
Right on.
And I just know personally that the flashing light sequences in the bridge were like two buttons off, so that I couldn't pay attention after that. I was just like, oh.
Exactly. Well, now we know for next episode.
Sorry, did you have a question? It sounded like I interrupted you.
Oh, that was the one that I had. So please go ahead.
All right. So you mentioned that you did some research for playing Spock. That piqued my interest. Were there any specific episodes that you watched?
I watched a lot of the early stuff on season one,
mm-hmm.
And then I also went back and watched the movies, and then I read some of the comics that featured the continuing voyages, like the fourth and fifth year of the original voyage, and also there was one comic that was very Spock heavy when after the J.J. Abrams timeline when he went back to rebuild, you know, kind of the new Vulcan outpost or whatever. And there was a lot of insight into his thoughts on that tragedy for him. And, mm-hmm. and so I was able to kind of just take it and look at it all and kind of stew on it and let it kind of mix in with the script analysis that I was already doing, just is the process that I do for any script,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of the character I'm playing. So all of that was very helpful for me.
So you're actually like you're kind of taking a combined approach of Spock from the Prime universe and with some elements of the Spock in the JJ universe.
Yeah, I feel like it's necessary because I want to see, because I feel like the JJ Abrams Spock, mm-hmm. specifically with Spock Prime, in that he's settled into more of the almost kind of human elements that he'll allow himself to go into. So that I'm like, okay, so that's my limit. So now where do we go before that? Where can we roam around before that? And that's where you reference the original series stuff.
All right.
Very cool.
That's awesome. So do you as an actor, because you mentioned earlier you were looking at the next script, do you, like, how much influence do you get to have in this series, or I mean, in any series that you've worked on how much the character develops?
Well, as far as input on the production itself, I get to talk about storylines, upcoming storylines, and contribute ideas. Mm-hmm. There's one that we're going to be working on shortly, where I, you know, Vic and I had talked about it for a while back, and there's. I can give input, like on the current script, I can give some input. And as far as like what I get to do with my character, you know, I really don't try to alter that too much, because when Vic has had his hand on it,
mm-hmm.
I know that it's been given such a scrutiny that I don't need to question if Spock would do this or Spock wouldn't do this, because right. he knows it so well.
Yeah, he's definitely very passionate about it. It was a lot of fun having him on the show when we interviewed him about the episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's like, that in that way, it's kind of easy for me because great, I don't have to, that's one extra thing I don't have to do.
Okay. Now, since you've done a lot of voice acting in the past, what is, like, what's the, obviously there's the immediate difference of being between voice acting and live action is that you're actually visible on screen. But as an actor for you, what's the biggest difference in how you prepare for those roles and how you play them?
Well, for the voice acting side of things, it's actually, there's not a whole lot of preparation because we don't get the scripts beforehand. And so when we come in, it's almost like a cold read. We have the voice that we set in at the beginning of the session, and then I really rely on the director to help me out and to really know where I should take the character as far as intentions and things like that. And once we kind of get an understanding of where the character's coming from, then I take it and kind of bring my stuff to it.
Okay, cool.
So it's a lot it's a lot different than an on-camera role. Like, once we kind of lock in the script, which should be this week, I get from this point until we start filming to kind of mull over it, think about it, you know, get ready for it, and so it's a really cool luxury that we don't typically get in the voiceover world.
So you in the voice when you're doing voiceover work, you get the script and then you almost like immediately have to turn it around and do the performance.
Pretty much, yeah. Like for Nickelodeon, when I go in and work for them, I get like a day. Audiobooks, I get a little more time, but even then, it's not a whole bunch considering how much material is there.
Yeah, definitely. And when you are doing voice acting, do you get to do it across from the other cast members, or do you have to record separately?
Typically, it's separately for video games and for anime. For the shows that I work on with Nickelodeon, it's all the members that are in that episode are in the room with me.
Okay.
And so that's fun. And there are times when very rarely do we get it to where everybody's in the same room. And that's always the most fun. I really like doing that. But it's not always logistically possible or for, you know, budget-wise, schedule-wise, et cetera. So it's I understand why they can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it would be much more challenging to try to get, you know, get your voice right when you don't have another actor to play off of.
Yeah, it's but you know what? It's all fun because with voiceover, you usually have a director that knows what they want, knows what they're doing, and you can trust them fully. Mm-hmm.
Now, on that same notion, would you be interested in doing another Star Trek animated series?
Oh man, yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, that'd be fantastic.
Well, you heard it here. You heard it here first.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to do that. I mean, I think that what that allows is that allows the, you know, you can do things that maybe you couldn't normally do with the budget that you have for an episode. You could do it in an animated form, and I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, that's always been some of, like, you know, the big advantage to doing an animated series, and we've talked about that a lot on the show. Now. When you're doing, because I mentioned earlier that you were also, in addition to doing your animation and your live action stuff, you've also done video game work. When you're doing video game work, how's that different from voice acting for anime or cartoons?
With video game work, the lines, typically we won't see any of the animation. We sometimes you don't even know what your character looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more kind of fast-paced in the sense that you'll take a line and you'll do it like three times, three different ways, and the director picks one, then you move on to the next line. So you don't – it's not even really a script.
Right.
Oftentimes it's just your separate lines are pulled. And so it's a lot more disjointed on the games I've worked with, especially like with a fighting game where it's just you do all the reactions, you do all the power calls, you do all the death scene. You know, so it's just a different aspect of kind of the same coin.
So you don't even really know what you're reacting to, or like what's...
Oh, yeah. Ew. No way. We just get a description like, okay, like in Black Ops, like, all right, your character's on fire now. Okay, you just got shot. You just got shot with a shotgun. Now you've been shot with a handgun. Now you've been, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, boy. I think if someone told me that and I was trying to record, I would just be like, I would just fall onto the floor, and they'd be like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Well, I'm dead. I just got shot with a shotgun."
Yeah, you told me to react. So yeah. And those sessions are always tough. Like when it's a war game, like Brothers in Arms or something like that. When I did the game Rage, it was so much yelling. I lost my voice for almost 10 days straight. I couldn't even whisper. There was so much yelling.
That sounds like a problem for a voice actor. If I would go out on a limb here.
Oh yeah. No, I was really scared. I thought that something was going to be permanently wrong with my voice. I was really worried. Like 10 days. That's a long time to lose your tool.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad it worked out because that would be very unfortunate.
Oh God, me too. I mean, because you know when you're waiting in line at a like at you know Disneyland or something, you're like, oh my God, 2 hours. That's 10 days. 10 days. So,
And sorry, if you have any questions, please go ahead. I don't mean to be riding over you here.
Actually, every question that I've come up with, you've asked, so you're doing great.
All right, so listeners, just imagine me saying some of these in Sori's voice, and you'll get the full experience. But I have another Spock-related question for you, Todd, because you said that you went and watched the movies. Now, did you feel like there was a distinct difference between Spock in the series and then Spock in the movies when you were doing your research?
Yeah, you know, I felt like in watching the movies, Spock is more, he's got a little, it's almost like Spock, like Leonard Nimoy has more figured out about the character. Because when you're watching the series, there are things where they don't quite have his characteristics figured out yet. They don't know how a Vulcan, because there are times when he's smiling, there are times when he's, you know, and so I felt like once I got to the films, they'd stepped away from the series for many, many years. And not many, many years, but many years. I mean, that's a long time in the world of production to step away as long as they did.
Yeah. It was what, like about a decade? Maybe I'm missing that. More like...
So Spock was more comfortable in his own skin by the time we see him again in the films.
Yeah, and I felt like there's... And when he does that, he's able to have more fun, even though it's not necessarily with a smile. He's just able to kind of explore.
He plays off that.
Yeah, play off of everybody. And there's a good camaraderie between these actors that have been together for a long time. And so it's good to kind of see that and to think about that and where those seeds started on the original 5-year mission.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about playing off of other characters. Spock has, of course, his very famous banter with McCoy back and forth. We saw some of that in Pilgrim for Eternity. I'm hoping we'll see more of it later. Because you're playing off of Larry Nemechek. I don't know if he's going to be returning as McCoy. But what's that like for you when you're going through those lines?
Well, you know, Vic is... He really makes it a point to try to include some of that banter, and Larry, of course, is a huge encyclopedia of Star Trek knowledge, and so he would remark about how Spock and Bones go back and forth, and like that's the other thing is like if I ever need an answer to something, I just go, Vic, Larry, what's the answer to this, and they'll know right away. So that's another like, hey, that's great, awesome, thanks guys.
Right on.
Now, I don't recall if Spock got to Vulcan neck pinch anybody in Pilgrims of Eternity. I don't think so.
No.
Not in that episode.
Are you going to get to next time? Can you tell us that? Because that's... I can
neither confirm nor deny that.
Because I'm looking forward to it. What kind... obviously, Spock has the ears as part of his makeup. Is there anything else like that's big that you have to go through beyond standard, you know, stage lighting?
Well, the ears, they take about 3 hours to put on. Two to three hours.
Goodness.
Wow.
And it's a long process to make them look natural. And then it takes about an hour to get out of them.
Ooh.
And so I'm the first one on set with the makeup artists, and I'm one of the last few to leave. That part is difficult. That's hard to do. But outside of growing the hair out, like right now I'm growing it out and I'm going to cut it, in mid-October.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, really the ears are the most troublesome the part. And also like having to shave every day.
Yeah.
Because I can't really grow a beard, but it's noticeable. And it's like I have this like baby skin. And so like if I shave it too much, my skin gets mad at me. And so having to do that every day is tricky. And also the makeup artist wanted to go with the idea that, you know, we have the makeup styles of the 60s. So it's on a little thicker and a little more noticeable than makeup nowadays. And so that's thicker makeup. So there are a couple of things that creep up on you that people don't really think about, I think.
Yeah, see, I just sort of assumed that by now that the ears would be easier to do. Because like it seems like so many, it seems like they sell so many, you know, do your own ears things in stores nowadays. But I imagine these ones are a lot more, you know, a lot higher quality.
Yeah, these ears are actually fitted to my, they're molded from my own ear,
mm-hmm.
And so and then we had an Academy, like Academy Award winner, mold the ears once they were taken from the guy, the makeup artist that did Buffy, and so they take a long time to get just right because we're using these really fantastic lenses on these great high definition cameras, and you can see every seam if it's not right.
Yeah.
And so we've got to get it just right. So it certainly takes time. It's multiple layers of gluing it on and blow drying it and then going over it again and then the perfect amount of makeup, and so it's quite a process.
See, this is what we like to call dedication. One more question about the ears. Once you've got them on, is it like, all right, they're on, I'm good to go, or are they like a distraction you have to work through?
You know, the way that these guys put them on, I don't even think about them. Like, I'll reach over and scratch my ear, and I'm like, ah! I'm like, oh, yes, I have the ears on.
Okay.
But
that's good.
When we did the vignettes, they hurt a lot. Oh. And I was getting migraines throughout the day just because the way they were put on. But these ears were adjusted, and they feel great. And I asked them, I go, can I just stay in the ears and, like, come back the next day so we don't have to do it? And they're like, no, because your ears are so sensitive that any kind of pressure on them long term will give you horrible migraines. So that's why I have to come in every day.
Interesting. It says here that you've also worked on Farragut. Can you tell us anything about the experience or the similarities or differences between that production and this production?
Well, that one, I did all my scenes outdoors, so that was the first difference. It was super cold in the morning, and then hot in the afternoon, and then cold again at night because we shot it in the Mojave, and Vic directed that, and so it was a. And it was involving a lot of the same people that work on that work on Continues. And in fact, Farragut still works very closely with us. And Captain Carter, John Broughton, is an integral part to Continues. And so it was different because in that thing I was in their episode I was a Romulan kind of antagonist character in there, and it was different because. I had the ears and I had a similar haircut, but it was a totally different, I was Romulan. So it was a different thought process entirely for the script, and lots of green blood was in that. I spit up a lot of green minty blood in that episode.
Wow.
It's always interesting to see an actor go from playing a Romulan to playing a Vulcan and vice versa, because they're like almost the same makeup, but they're such vastly different species.
Yeah, and with that, it just, it was a great opportunity to do that. But when I got into my, custom-made, Trek boots and the fitted Trek uniform for Spock, and I got these ears on, and, I mean, it felt good to walk out onto the Enterprise bridge. And the camera, there's that shot at the end of the first episode that pulls back, like that classic shot where you see the whole bridge. I mean, that was a really fantastic moment because everyone on set, it was so quiet because everyone was like, that's it right there. There's the Trek. So it was cool to be a part of that and to see that.
Right on. I was going to ask, what was it like stepping out onto the bridge for the first time?
It's interesting because I think about it later. Because when I'm in it, I'm focusing on, okay, this is a scene we're about to do. I've got where am I in this journey of the episode? What's going on? Do I have my lines memorized? I'm trying to work with the other actors and, listen up to where I need to be on set, et cetera. And so, but when I look at it later, it's like I think back on those moments. I'm like, oh, man, that was so cool. And that was rad. I mean, when we're taking our lunch break and stuff, we're at ease and we can kind of think about it more. But when I'm in it, I'm really trying to focus on making sure that, I don't let everybody down is my main goal.
Right.
Well, I don't think there was any danger of that based on your performance.
Oh, hey, you know what? Thank you so much. And I mean, I'm not kidding. People were like, they nitpick. They're like, well, his tunic is this. There's a crease in there. Or he's like, well, Spock isn't Asian. Or it's like, Spock's... Leonard Nimoy was Russian. He was part Russian. So are you telling me the Vulcans are Russian or what? Like, they just pull these crazy things out of the air. And so it's great to run into fans that just, you know, they're appreciating it for what it is. It's us walking down a cool memory lane and trying to make new stories for, you know, kind of in a classic setting and, you know, putting our hearts into it. And, you know, it's funny because James Bond will, I mean, there's always going to be a comparison because people love Trek so much. They're always going to compare it to the original series, but you accept it. And you it's like every time a new James Bond comes out, you compare him and we still compare him. But it's at a certain point, you're like, okay, Daniel Craig's doing his thing. Great. Awesome. Mm-hmm. He's the new Bond. Or like with Batman, you're like, you compare them, but at the same time, it's, you don't say, oh, well, Michael Keaton wouldn't have said that. Oh, he wouldn't have done that. It's, you know, it's, it, because you they're their own entity.
Yeah. It's probably, it's one of those things that I imagine will get less problematic as more people play the roles. Like, you know, probably if you went to James Bond right after the Sean Connery films, you might get people being like, that's not Sean Connery, you know, rabble, rabble. But now that's something we accept.
Yeah, I think so for sure.
And I'm hoping we get to that point, because I don't know, it seems like, you know, it seems really pointless to be nitpicking over stuff that really is kind of inconsequential in the grand scheme of things.
I agree. It's the, you know, I understand if people have their critiques, but I mean, critique something that actually matters to the, you know,
yeah,
it gets to the point. So
I mean, you're playing a character, and you know, some, like, I can understand, you know, it's, if I would, the whole, like, I don't know, you said, it really bothered me when you said that someone was saying that, like, was giving you trouble over Spock not being Asian. That strikes me as being very inappropriate.
Yeah, it's, you know, people, it's weird how people are going to react to someone messing with their baby. And I get it, but, yeah, it's so odd how they'll pick and choose. It's kind of like, okay, Spock's not Asian, but you'll buy the fact that Apollo is sucking power from worship and getting younger. You'll buy that, but oh, an Asian Spock? That's too much out of the realm of believability. We can't have that. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, or in the pilot that Spock smiled at some blue flowers. That was,
yeah, it's like, yeah. Oh wait, we have phaser weapons that shoot lasers, but an Asian Spock can't have that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, more on the character of Spock in this episode, that in Pilgrim of Eternity, he was primarily advising Kirk, which was cool, and I like to see him in that role. But it's also kind of exciting, like, you know, in certain episodes of Star Trek, when either Kirk's incapacitated or off somewhere else, when Spock gets to take command, and I'm assuming at some point you'll get to do that. Are you have you thought about how you'll play the character when he's in a command position instead of an advisory position?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Oh dear.
These comments. But if that were to happen in the future, I would imagine it would be a lot of fun.
I can only hope. Do you mind telling us how you were introduced to Star Trek?
You know, I used to see it on TV when I was a kid, and I would watch it, and it was really unlike, God, I mean, it was really unlike anything that was on television, and I didn't understand all the nuances of it at the time, because, you know, you're just watching it as a kid through children's eyes, you know, through a child's eyes. You're watching it because it's just sci-fi and it's cool, and
it's, you know, there's aliens. Awesome spaceship.
And, yeah. So, but I grew up with it, and then it was Next Gen, and then it was Deep Space Nine, and you know, I just kind of stuck with that world. And of course, the movies came out, and so I just kind of stumbled upon it and kind of stuck with it.
Cool. Do you have a few favorite episodes that you like that have really stuck with you?
Well, Mirror Mirror is, like, I feel like everyone loves that episode.
It was a really good episode.
I like, God, what's another? Let's see. Charlie X.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's funny to. Kirk's the only one in the gym not, you know, just, he didn't care about dress code. I'm going to come in here, no shirt. I've got my red Santa pants on, and you're going to have to deal with it.
Captain that was Privilege.
Fun. Yeah, just those funny little, like, Shatner calls that I'm like, I can just picture Shatner off camera like, well, you know, I know it doesn't call for it, but I really think Kirk is shirtless here. And I could just see the producers like, okay, whatever you want to do, Bill. That sounds good to me. But those episodes are always fun. Gosh, I mean, they're all kind of like so unique in their in kind of how they hit you as an audience member. I mean, there's something great about all of them and kind of the different levels they hit you on as far as thematically and kind of character-wise at what we're seeing happen to, you know, the risks that Kirk takes. And, you know, honestly, with Shatner, people really kind of, you know, there are a couple of camps of thought on his acting, and some are like, man, he's really overdramatic, or he's this, but it's like when you really listen to the words that he's saying and the situations he's in, it's like, you know, really? He kind of, that's really, I wonder if there's any other way you could have done those things, because he really took command of it, and he had the, you know, it was, I felt like it was a great way to tackle what he did. Mm-hmm. And I dig on it, so.
Yeah.
I have a question. How would you like to see the character of Spock develop as Star Trek goes on? In the original series, we saw that Nurse Chapel had a huge crush on him. Any chance that perhaps would you like to see that develop in something concrete? Or what do you see Spock developing as in the future?
I feel like as we move further in the series, I would love to see Spock kind of do exactly what you're talking about earlier when you said, you know, talking about taking command and kind of almost being, you know, being more instituted as Kirk's kind of right-hand dude. Mm-hmm. And opportunities, like I love those episodes in the original series where you see him lose control. Like there's that scene where he's in the conference room and he's talking about how he's got to hold on to the you know, the control, and he can't, you know, he doesn't want to lose control. Like those challenges, those acting challenges are fun. I mean, I would say that I'm open to anything that brings those challenges to my plate and being able to wrestle with them.
All right. So what I'm hearing is that the next time you guys do a script competition, we need to submit a script under which Spock has to go through Pon Farr like 5 or 6 times in the same episode.
I'm always ready for a little Pon Farr. So. Exactly.
Now, because I feel like I have to ask this of every guest that I have onto the show, what did you think of the most recent Abrams movie, Into Darkness?
I think that they're really good sci-fi movies that are set in a Trek world. I don't, and that's not to knock their production at all. I think they're great movies, science fiction movies. I think they just happen to be in a Star Trek world. So it's not necessarily that it's, and I see why he's doing it that way. He's trying to make Trek accessible for today's generation. And I think he's doing it very creatively. I think there's a lot of production value behind it. But I think he's a little frightened he's making the films he's scared to go more cerebral.
Mm-hmm.
I think he fears that. I think he thinks that it's not gonna be as billable to do that.
Yeah.
I appreciate those movies for what they are. I don't, you know, I don't sit here and say like, oh, that's not classic Trek, because that doesn't anger me. I see what he's doing and why he's doing it. So I don't think it's an insult to the original series. I just think that it's not really Star Trek.
Yeah, I thought much the same way. I thought Into Darkness was a great summer popcorn flick, not necessarily a great Trek movie. And then once I saw Star Trek Continues like the next weekend. And I went on my show and I praised it highly. I said, Into Darkness, not so much Trek, but if you want a Trek fix, you got to watch Star Trek Continues, because this did it. This had more Trek in it in an hour than Into Darkness had throughout the whole movie. It was just awesome. Great work.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that I know that you weren't the episode writer. I think that was Vic. He wrote and directed it. But your performance in it really helped cement the message of the episode. And that's something that I really miss about Star Trek, was that it had all of these morals and meanings that sometimes, I mean, you can still get them in some parts of television nowadays, but it doesn't feel as common. There's like a perception that sort of thing won't sell.
Yeah, you know, it's cool to hear you say that, because that's exactly what Vic and I were talking about just yesterday while we were waiting for our flight from an event in Vancouver. But we're talking about capturing those themes and exploring those themes in the backdrop of the Star Trek universe. And so it's exciting to talk about where the future is going to go and kind of what this means for us as a production. So it's an exciting time as we're kind of riding the high of the first episode and trying to, you know, not let everybody down with the follow-up.
And on that same note, are there any like issues or themes that are relevant today that you'd like to see Star Trek Continues address?
Well, that's a good question. Gosh.
It's a bit of a big one, and it's something that I think about a lot, so I ask that whenever I have the opportunity.
Wow. You know, I think it would be interesting to address a scenario where, kind of like with the NSA and the mm-hmm. you know, Edward Snowden stuff,
yeah.
addressing the fact that is Starfleet always right? And kind of visiting the fact that maybe we're not exactly the good guys. Maybe we're in a gray area, and that being okay. Or maybe it's not okay, and maybe that spins it off into some territory that, man, what are we going to do? Starfleet's the bad guy. Or I don't know. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, maybe Kirk and Spock have to do something about it. I think it's interesting that you say that, because I got a very similar answer from Ira Stephen Baer when I asked him. He was the showrunner for Deep Space Nine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very similar answer. So maybe you guys need to get together and we can make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know what? That would be awesome.
All right, so Mr. Baer, I know you're listening to this show. What you got? All right. I have more questions around here somewhere. I know we've been talking a lot about Star Trek and Star Trek Continues, but you are doing other work in addition to that. Are there any big projects you have coming up that you'd like the audience to know about?
Gosh, projects that I can talk about.
Yeah, that's always the trick.
Man, I wish I could talk about these things coming up, but it's my lips are sealed. There's really everything that I want to talk about, I can't, unfortunately. I would love to, but there's a lot of stuff in the world of video games, in the world of cartoons, and in the world of audiobooks right now that I would love to talk about. I guess the thing that just came out that's doing really well, thank God for the great director, I did the audiobook called The Demonologist, which the movie The Conjuring is based on. It's based on those two investigators, Ed and Lorraine, from those movies. This is the book about them. Cool. And that's doing very well on iTunes and at audible.com, and I just hope it keeps going.
And if our listeners, they want to find out more about you, where should they go?
You know what? If they want to find out, follow me on Twitter. I'm always on there, and Facebook. And I, you know, I'm not. I'm on there a lot on Twitter. I pop in on Facebook, but I don't just. You know, I don't use that to just be like kind of a marketing promotion thing. I pop on there, and I'm just goofy on there all the time. And I'll promote stuff here and there, but it's not one of those things where, you know, you sign up and then every day you get a message about penis enlargement. You know, I don't do that. So.
It's refreshing to know, because yeah, Twitter is kind of a tricky business. I've been having a hard time. It's like I want to use it, but I'm like I can't. I don't think I can be funny every day. How do I keep people interested?
Oh, yeah, you know what? I was thinking that. It's like sometimes I'm sitting there with the app open, and I'm like, I don't think I have anything funny to say, and I just sit there for a minute. I'm like, yeah, I better close it out. But yeah, it's like sometimes you see people on there that are just hilarious every single day, and I follow them. I'm like, oh, I want to be like you, like Condescending Wonka, or The Batman, who used to be the goddamn Batman, he's hilarious. He hasn't been on as much anymore, but there's a lot of funny dudes on there.
If anybody wants to support or help out with Star Trek Continues, is there any way that we can do that?
You know, people have approached us about that, actually, and we're getting a Kickstarter going. Also, if people want to go to our Star Trek Continues Facebook page or StarTrekContinues.com and send us an email, they know where to direct people more than I would. But those are certainly good places to start. But yeah, you know, the biggest thing about this is that we try to let people know that we don't make money on this. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a big investment from all of us, but really the big executive producers are Vic and Steven Dangler, who support this out of their own pockets. And so, you know, that's why a Kickstarter is coming. But I mean, these sets, the costumes, the makeup, flying people in, the equipment we use, you know, the guest stars that we bring on board, you know, flying them in and providing lodging and food. I mean, it's a big undertaking. It's very, very costly. So every cent that we spend, you see on the screen. And so I think that's an interesting point to note, because a lot of times you see these big budgets that pop out when these movies come out, and a lot of that is on marketing. Like, yeah. $50 million on marketing. Well, we don't do that. We don't have that kind of money. But everything that we spend is right on the screen. So support is always appreciated.
It definitely shows, and I know personally I'll be looking into it, because it's a great project, and I cannot wait to see more. So keep up the great work.
Hey, well, thank you so much. I really, really, really appreciate that. Thank you guys very much.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. You can be sure, anyone listening, that once the Star Trek Continues Kickstarter does start, we will certainly mention it. And again, thank you, Todd, for coming on the show and telling us all about playing Spock. Can't wait to see the next episode.
Oh, fantastic, guys. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, you have a wonderful evening.
All right. You too.
This is All Things Trek, signing off.
Bye.